Hey, it's Tony and Jenny Brewski from Real Ghost Stories Online. We absolutely love giving you the show every single day, Monday through Friday, for free. But it's not free to produce. And if you'd like to keep the show on the air, we ask for your support and become an EPP.
When you become an EPP, you'll get more than 23 bonus episodes of the show to listen to.
These are exclusive episodes that are only available to our EPPs with some of the best stories we've ever gotten on them.
Please help keep Real Ghost Stories Online on the air.
And become an EPP today, an extra podcast person, on the website realghoststoriesonline.com. It's only $5 a month. You get all the extras and the knowledge that you are keeping this show going. Please and thank you.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
Today, for a babysitter, the four young children she cares for are not what is terrifying about her job. A visit to a former plantation has everyone in the room talking, even those who are not living. A little girl's imaginary friend has a documented history from centuries ago. And a curse is placed on the father. A family goes to great lengths to restore peace and bring daddy back. Those stories, your calls, and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm interested in our stories today. They sound rather creepy.
Yeah, you know, there's something about creepy stories, right?
Yeah, we should do a show about that, you know, where they talk about them for like an hour or something every day. Just, I think it'd probably go over pretty well. I think there might be an audience for it.
Think?
Just possibly. Not quite sure. Yeah. Welcome to Knitting with Jenny and Tony. Today, we're going to tell you how to do a wonderful crochet. Am I terminology right there? A crochet with, is that different?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
I'm not crafty that way.
What I'm interested here was that little girl's imaginary friend and some documentation being found, because all too often that doesn't exist.
I know.
So I'm interested in hearing about that. Hey, it's funny how the internets work and how something has been out there for quite a while can suddenly kind of resurface, and suddenly everybody's like really excited about it.
Okay.
I posted on our website today because it's floating around out there, and I guess this is something that's been on there on YouTube since it's like 2009, I guess. And it's this video of and people are talking about it, of Disneyland security camera, allegedly.
Okay.
And it's pretty creepy. Now, could this be doctored up? Sure. Could there be a thousand things? Yeah. Other than a ghost. But if it is what it is purportedly being,
okay,
it's creepy. Suddenly, out of nowhere, kind of near the Haunted Mansion area, this thing, like this white figure, kind of appears out of a flash, almost like how you would see an orb kind of appear in video, and how I've seen real ones appear. And it kind of goes down this path, and it looks like someone's walking, and then it goes up to the next thing, and the next camera it's on that's catching the next area, and it just kind of moves around. And it's a pretty full-figured apparition-like.
Okay.
It's creepy. It's on the website right now if you want to see it. Check it out, realghoststoriesonline.com. A lot of people are like, it's BS, it's this or that. You know, no one's going to ever be able to substantiate the thing. But take it for what it's worth. If you want to see kind of a creepy video that does look like it could possibly be legitimate, it's good.
See, in my mind, if all the places in the world that would have the technology and the endless amount of money to come up with something like this, it would be Disney.
Sure. And the thing is, it's not put out by Disney. This is like somebody that it looks like they're videotaping a security camera with their own camera.
Okay.
Okay. So it's, you know, it's supposedly a little bit older film, because it did come out in 2009. You can track when the originally hit the internet.
Now, is this Disneyland or Disney World?
Land.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. It's it is interesting. I will say that. The thing is, when you get the videos online of ghosts, you know, quote unquote, everybody's like, you're going to have a ton that are going to be like, oh, it's BS. You're going to have a ton that's saying it's real. You're going to have a ton that's like, oh, we can't prove it. There will never be a video of a ghost that shows up anywhere that will ever be 100% anyone saying this is the real deal.
Right.
They just won't. Right. There's always going to be somebody that's going to say, yeah, it could be this. But you just got to take them for what they're worth. So I'm just saying, I don't know.
Okay.
Because I don't know. So, and that's kind of what we say on the whole show the whole time. I don't know. So it's as good as most of our stories.
Okay.
So check it out. It's interesting. RealGhostStoriesOnline.com. While you're there, well, it might not be a bad idea to click that Become an EPP button. Support the show. Keep it going. We'd love that. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Jennifer writes in, hi, Tony and Jenny. I just discovered your podcast and have become an EPP. $5 per month is reasonable and worth it to keep you going. All of us spend more than that on just going to a fast food place. Love your show. Smiley face. Thank you. I have had many paranormal experiences during my lifetime, but this story... it's from the early 1980s when I was a teenager and lived in Maryland. Back then, the paranormal was not mainstream, and the only paranormal program we could watch was In Search Of. At age 12, I started... Do you remember In Search Of?
No.
I barely remember it.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, Unsolved Mysteries kind of came out a little bit after that, but it was along those kind of lines, if you will.
Okay.
At age 12, I started babysitting for a family I was very fond of in my neighborhood. The parents were very sweet, and so were the four little ones they had. They were also very religious, Christian family whose lives revolved around the church. At homework time, I used to have to help the kids memorize their assigned Bible verses for school. I had to do that, too. I hated it.
Yeah.
If you could go back to tell me one thing, or what would you like to eliminate from your childhood school days?
Mm-hmm.
Be that. And they got worse as you got older.
Yeah.
By like fifth grade, it was like, okay, memorize these two pages, and then you have to go recite it verbatim. It's part of your grade, your overall grade. Because I went to a Lutheran school in Wisconsin until fifth grade.
Those of us public school kids didn't have to deal with that.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't fair. And it wasn't fair that it went against your actual overall grade. It's like, it was just sheer memorization. And oh, God, I hated that. Continuing on. And I'm not saying I hated the content. I hated having to memorize shit.
Yeah.
It's like, why? Why? From the first time I entered the home, I got a very uneasy feeling. The feeling never went away over the next 4 years that I worked for them. Mostly little weird things would happen, either to me or them. I'd also make sure to lock the basement door when I arrived as it gave me serious goosebumps. I never went down there and forbid the kids from going down there when I was there. It did not help the creep factor that the house was minimally furnished, with the living room and dining room being completely empty. There were no curtains or shades either. I know that they were struggling financially, and at least the family room had furniture and a TV. Likewise, the bedrooms were also spartan, with only a bed and each and a dresser. Babysitting during daylight hours was a little unnerving, as I just kept having this chronic feeling of uneasiness. But as a teen, I needed the money, so I kept going back. The kids were adorable, and I just... busied myself with them so that I didn't think about the uneasiness I felt. I cringed when I had to go babysit at night. I could feel eyes boring into me, no matter what part of the house I was in. Although the majority of the time we were in the family room, it would get more eerie after I put the kids to bed. I'd turn off the TV for a welcome distraction, but it always felt like someone was in the family room peering at me. I was not very savvy back then about ghosts or the paranormal. In retrospect, I would have done prayers and a cleansing. On a side note, I babysat for other families during this time period and never had any problem, only at this one house. One summer day, I was on the first floor and the kids were out back playing. I heard the most god-awful crash on the second floor. The closest way I could describe it was that it sounded as if an entire cabinet full of china had been pushed over, and it all crashed and broke all over the floor. The floor actually shook over my head. I was shaking like a leaf and ran outside to gather the kids and head to a neighbor's house for help. I wanted him to call the police. I was sure that someone had actually gotten into the house. Well, this neighbor, who was very brave or very stupid, did a search of the upstairs, and nothing was out of place. We all stayed down at my house until their mom got home and I told her what had happened. She didn't have much to say. I think she was stunned or hiding something from me. Another time I babysat for a couple of days in a row when the parents went away, and I opened the garage door and there were millions of maggots crawling over the garage floor. It was like a scene straight out of a horror story. The floor was a sea of wiggling, worm-like things. This garage was enormous, so imagine the horror of seeing that. I discovered that the parents forgot to put a trash can outside, but the sheer volume of creepy crawlies all over the place could not be explained away by one trash can. Maggots stay near their food source. I spent hours cleaning the garage out with Ajax and a hose. Disgusting beyond description, and typical of the weird things that went on there. When I was 16, after 4 years of babysitting for the family, I went up to babysit again, as usual, but the mom had a very weird look on her face and said that she had something to tell me, but she didn't want to scare me. She said that she and her husband were constantly hearing footsteps and walking on the second floor when nobody was up there. I can't remember my response, but I felt at least I wasn't crazy. I knew something resided there. Considering this revelation came from super religious people who didn't believe in ghosts, it was incredible news. Shortly thereafter, they put the house up for sale and then they moved to another state. Looking back, our old neighborhood had been built on what was previously a farm. I heard that the prior farm resident had hung himself. Not sure if that had anything to do with the haunt. Their property also felt strange as soon as I stepped into their yard. I didn't like it. Maybe the land was the problem. I also find it's curious that all of the families I did babysit for, this particular family was the religious one, and the one being haunted.
You know, I think it's one of those cases where it's something that's kind of negative that just lingers on the property. Mm-hmm. But had it not been a family that did make their religious practices such an integral part of their day, then, you know, the spirit may have been kind of indifferent. That may have been what upset the spirit.
Kind of like a trigger?
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not at all saying that if you're religious, you're going to, you know, make things worse. That may mm-hmm. have just been the case this time to where, I don't know. What do you think?
I think it could very well be a trigger. I mean, you could also make the argument the other way, too, if the folks were... depending on, you know, one's religious views, someone can make the argument of, if they didn't have that in their life, it could have been that much worse. And maybe this was kind of keeping it somewhat at bay.
Sure.
You know, it could really go both ways with no real right answer.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't know that their religious views played into it. I'll say this. I think it played into it one way or the other. Okay. Either your way or my way, and I don't know.
Okay.
Because yours makes sense. I think mine would make sense, but it would be hard to say what's what.
Sure.
I'm wondering, just like with the weirdness of the maggots and everything, that's what kind of makes me think there's something darker going on here.
Sure.
It seems like, you know, your friendly neighborhood dead ghost or dead neighbor that's still haunting the property is not necessarily bringing plagues of maggots to the garages of its residents. It makes me wonder, you know, sometimes nature will play into reality, if you will, or factual things, you know, and maggots do tend to... crawl, like they said, and be on their food source. So to be all over a garage floor without a food source, it's rather bizarre.
Sure.
That right there made me wonder, what was this thing built on? Not necessarily the guy that hung himself. I'm thinking more so, what's under this house?
Well, the reason that I kind of thought maybe the religious practices stirred it up is being that the original property was divided up and several houses were built upon it, and mm-hmm. this is the only one that seems to have any issue.
Yeah.
That made me wonder if that was the one thing that was different, if that was stirring the pot. But
sure.
I don't know. could be very right, too, and thinking that's the only thing keeping it at bay. It's just odd that it's just that particular house and they're not all experiencing something.
I'm wondering if there's a sea of bodies underneath that garage.
Why would there still be maggots if it's like old bodies? 'Cause
I don't know.
I'm sure they're fully, you know, down to skeleton.
Yeah, because they're a maggot meal. I don't know. I mean, that's, I wonder if there's something to playing there. I don't know. Theo writes, and hello, Tony and Jenny. My story is based around a historic building in Stoughton, Virginia, that is now occupied by Stoughton's Parks and Recreations offices. It used to be the home of a rich family sometime before the Civil War. The building was built by the patriarch of the family. He had a few children and started living there, and they had a lot of slaves. Those who died were buried on the property with unmarked graves. All the family died there, and then it went through plenty of generations. The one time that I've been there is when I went on a ghost tour with some ghost hunters. My best friend and I went with a group of 15 or so. One of the investigators told us about experiences and the history that happened in and around the building. A few notable ones are that many people see the wife of the family staring out of the window into the courtyard. Also, on a few tours, they've seen black figures running through the yard. After that, we went down to the cellar to spend the rest of our time using a spirit box. The cellar is a kind of a big room with a door to the right after you walk in. Keep this in mind. We sat down on a row of chairs. They had few electronically activated dolls that apparently the ghost-like, and they would set off, some being activated by motion, light, and sound. We were told about the ghost that resides in the basement. The person using the spirit box sat at a table, and usually a young slave boy around my age, 14 to 16, would stand over her shoulder and just stand there. Unfortunately, we didn't see the spirit. Apparently, you could also see shadow people moving around sometimes. We turned off the lights and started asking questions. Just simple stuff, really. Are you a slave? Do you like horses? Etc. A while in, I started to see movement in the back of the cellar that was near the stairs, which thoroughly freaked me out. A while through this, a man started hearing voices, having conversations from behind the door that I mentioned earlier. Later, the people around him started commenting on it. Also, even my friend noticed, but I don't have a very good hearing, so I didn't notice it. We were finishing up the session when one of the light-sensitive dolls went off. These were Halloween dolls that made creepy noises. The thing was that the only light source in the room was from a candle, which scared the hell out of the people near it. That is one of my few unexplained experiences that I've had. I also have one question about an experience I had a week ago. I went outside to get something out of my parents' car. I unlocked it from inside and then went out. When I got to the car, it randomly locked, and I could smell a weird smell in the air. Neither of my parents touched the keys, and the car has no troubles. My question, can ghosts give out smells? I love your show, and you've made me lose a ton of sleep. Thanks for reading.
Well, I will say, and this may not be the case with that car, but my car has locked itself on me before because that's what it does if you don't open the doors after a set amount of time when you unlock it.
Actually, I've looked into that, and your car does not do that.
My car does not do that?
But it does do that.
Okay, it's not supposed to do that.
I'm kidding.
From the manufacturer?
I'm kidding.
Okay, don't mess with me on the show. Because it did that to me one time.
Sure, it does. Yeah.
And so they do that.
Typically, when you have the key in the ignition, it should do that. I don't believe they're supposed to do that without the key. I think passenger doors do. I don't believe the driver's door is supposed to. That's... I could be wrong.
Okay.
But I think the key should be in the ignition for that to actually occur.
See, I've had it... And this was with my last car, to where if I unlocked it and then I just didn't go out as quick as I thought I would, that after a set amount of time, the doors would lock on their own back.
I think that's dependent on how you're unlocking it. Meaning if you're using the key fob.
Okay.
Or in the car.
Okay. Ghost giving off smells. probably not, you know, not that often, but sometimes you get that like cigar sure. smell of somebody old. And,
yeah. I mean, I think it really kind of depends on the ghost.
Yeah.
Typically your darker ones have kind of a rank smell, mm-hmm. if you will. I haven't used that word in a long time.
No. You get the old lady perfume ones a lot.
Yeah, and that tends to be more the human type ones where it's like cigar or perfume or just kind of, you know, whatever they smelled like. Mothballs.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. But usually if you have a ghost and if it smells really bad, that's not usually the sign of a good ghost.
Yeah.
That's where you should probably go get yourself a little bit of sage. Make some stuffing and clean your house.
It's a different kind of sage.
I wish it was the same.
No, it's not.
I know, but I wish
but you're going to have listeners smudging their house with turkey stuffing sage.
I would just smudge your house with turkey stuffing. Just stovetop. Just take and put it all around the house. Hey, it does wonders. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. I think they would... if you went to a garden center...
No.
And you asked them, they would know what type of sage you're looking for?
Probably not.
Interesting. Is it going to be dried? Is it be fresh?
I don't know.
We should look into that. What?
Nothing. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know if you know any of these answers. Annie writes in. Is it Ann or Annie? A-N-N-E.
Annie.
Annie? Okay. I was born in Nashville, Tennessee, and lived there with my family until we moved when I was 5. The few memories I have of Nashville are vague because I was so young. As a child, I had many imaginary friends, and I used to talk to my stuffed animals and pretend they were alive. Usual kid stuff. The only thing that kind of freaked out my mom was one imaginary friend I had named Tusky. My imaginary friends usually came and went, but Tusky was my playmate until we moved to another city. When I asked about Tusky, I said that he had tan skin, black hair, and was almost naked. Upon pushing for more, I described Tusky as wearing kind of a napkin on his wee-wee, which my mom interpreted as a loincloth. Considering that I had just recently mastered the English language and did not have the attention span to watch the movies like Tarzan all the way through, my mom considered that I could have befriended a ghost. My mom isn't really a spiritual person and doesn't truly believe I used to play with and talk to a ghost, but I think it could have been paranormal. Upon doing research, I found that this native tribe of Shawnee populated the area around Nashville, and that our own neighborhood was built on a native burial ground. To top it all off, I found a list of recorded Shawnee natives. One from the 1700s was named Tuscarigo. Do you think that it's really I befriended, or that Tusky was just another imaginary friend?
I'm going to have to go with, I think it's more than imaginary friend.
That's a pretty interesting name.
It is, and, you know, if you hadn't seen Tarzan or Jungle Book or any of those movies when you're little, you probably haven't seen too many things on TV or whatever with Indians and loincloths.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not your typical, oh, my imaginary friend looks exactly like me kind of situation.
Yeah, that's a little different. It's just the uniqueness of the name, and I could see that. Yeah, I'm going with you had a ghost imaginary friend.
Yeah, I think so.
Didn't your mom...
She did.
When she was a kid?
Yeah.
And didn't it look kind of like that, too?
Uh-huh.
It was, like, in the Native American garb,
yeah.
If you will?
Basically, he wore, like... Mom said he wore... She called them, like, shorts, like, skin shorts.
Okay.
I'm thinking it was a loincloth. And moccasins, and that was all he wore.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And then it kind of goes back to you wonder about how you dress as a ghost. So staying with period mm-hmm. and staying with what you normally wore, I think it's probably what you're comfortable in.
Yeah.
It seems to be, you know, what people enjoyed wearing.
Mom's imaginary friend / ghost friend was older than her. So it was just a really peculiar mix of things that made up this person to where it just isn't what somebody that age would have come up with. A 3-year-old.
How much older?
She said that he was probably, looking back, he was probably like 8 or 9.
Okay.
Where she's 3 or 4.
Sure. Yeah. Normally when you have an imaginary friend, isn't it kind of usually around the same age?
Yeah.
And when most kids are doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Thanks for sharing that story with us. Laura writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. I'd like to tell you about a house my family lived in when I was growing up in Auckland, New Zealand. During this time, my parents were having a little trouble with the mortgage and decided to rent out the house we owned and move in with another family, my godmother's family, to see if both families could cut costs this way. My godmother's house was a pretty 1920s bungalow with enough room for both families. My parents slept in the sleepout that was in the backyard. The sleepout was actually pretty nice. It had its own wood burner. It was pretty cozy. My brother and I had rooms side by side in the main house, 2 narrow bedrooms with built-in wardrobes at one end and a big sash windows at the other. Both families got on well and our bedrooms were nice, but somehow we just never wanted to be in them. It's hard to explain, but those rooms were just not comfortable to be in, and mine especially. I was a big reader, but I would go in there, flop down in my bed to read, but just couldn't settle. You'd constantly be looking up or realize you hadn't taken in any of the words because you were just listening, although for what, you didn't know. Neither of us liked to have the doors to those rooms closed, although in a house with 2 families, you often wanted some privacy. You didn't really think about it as a kid. You just got up and went out of the room and found somewhere else to be. Anyway, if daytime was bad, nighttime was worse. It was distracting, and the daylight was extremely unpleasant then. I could never settle. I always felt weird and sometimes actually queasy. Oftentimes, we'd beg our parents to let us sleep out back in the sleepout with them, even though we considered ourselves far too old for that kind of thing and would have been mortified if our friends had found out. Eventually, we moved back into our own house. I probably would not have thought anything more about it, except that after we moved out of my godmother's house, a young mother and her daughter, who was a toddler, moved in. The daughter had my old room, and every night she would stand up in her cot and say goodnight to the old woman she saw outside the window. They left quicker than we did, and after that, a variety of people had the room. One woman who stayed there, who none of us kids liked because she was bossy and aggressive, said she was woken up by some unseen person punching her in the face. The creepiest part for me came several years later when I was eavesdropping on my mother and godmother chatting about the house, and I heard them wonder if the activity in the room had anything to do with the previous occupant, an old woman who had hung herself there. I got a question. Because this has come up a few times. What is the correct way of saying this? An old woman who had hanged herself there, or an old woman who had hung herself there? I say hung, but when listeners write in, I see a lot of hanged herself there, or hanged, the ED.
I don't honestly know. To me, they both sound correct, but I know obviously one's wrong. So if somebody would let us know proper, because we do honestly have to say that quite a bit.
I always change it as I'm reading and say hung themselves, or because to me that just feels more correct, but I could be completely wrong. It could be one of those phrases where it is the other way and I'm just totally off because of my Wisconsin training and language skills.
Okay.
So
no, somebody let us know. So
no,
because it'll come up again.
Yeah. What made my flesh crawl was that the instant I heard that I could suddenly identify the weird and comfortable feeling I'd had at night in that room. It was like hearing that you'd spent the night in some strange old lady's bed without knowing it. It still creeps me out. Skeptics I know could say that I projected that knowledge back onto my experience, but I know that isn't so, and the other people experiencing things seem to vindicate me somehow too. Since that time, I've often had a strong sense of atmosphere in certain places, and I generally pay attention to it. Thanks. I love your show.
That's just unnerving to put all those pieces together and realize you were creeped out in a room that somebody had died in.
Mm-hmm.
So I would think that it had something to do with that, but whether or not it predated the person who died...
Hanged or hung themselves?
Yeah, I'm avoiding that until we find out the right way to say it.
What's interesting about it is if it is that person, it sounds like they had somewhat of an affinity for children. They didn't seem like the little girl was waved and said hi to it. I mean, it made him unsettled, which I think in almost any case, good or bad ghost, you're a kid, and if you're aware of the presence, you're going to feel a little bit unsettled. But it didn't, like, seem to try and do anything to the kids. Like I said, the one girl just waved. But the one lady, the adult, who was kind of cranky and aggressive towards children, this woman, if it is the same thing, was kind of aggressive towards the aggressive woman.
Yeah.
Maybe it was one of those things where she was hanging out, but she also was well aware of who was around. And
no pun intended.
What do you mean?
Hanging out.
Hanging out. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's a good observation. I didn't think about that.
It's interesting. You know, mm-hmm. Can you, as a ghost, go after asshole people? Can you be an asshole, as some would say it, to assholes?
I would think so. There's people in real life when you're alive that you're like, I just wish I could punch that person.
I think I'd make that my, if I get to be a ghost and go around, my whole mission is just going to be to go around and just make life miserable for assholes.
Okay. That sounds like a plan.
You want to join me in that?
No.
What are you going to do?
I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm not going to go around and punch people in the face.
Well, not necessarily punch them, but just, you know, mess with them. Make life a psychological thriller.
I don't know. I don't know what I'll do.
Jessica writes in, hello, guys. My name's Jessica. I recently came across your show on a podcast and immediately was hooked. Like everyone else that calls and writes in, I'd like to share my story. The house I live in currently, I've lived in for about 14 and a half years. Since moving in, I've never experienced anything out of the ordinary or paranormal until 11 years later. It started happening around mid-June. I just graduated high school and was enjoying my summer. One sunny summer day, I started noticing something change within the atmosphere of my home. It was very dark, even when the shades were open, but I noticed it was especially dark in my parents' room. I didn't think much of it until I started to feel uneasy. I'm not at all a skeptic. In fact, I've always had an interest in the paranormal, but never really thought I'd experience it. One night, as I was lying in bed, dozing off, not quite asleep, I suddenly felt a heavy feeling on my chest. As I tried to take a deep breath, thinking maybe I just needed to take a deep breath, I could not. As I opened my eyes, my mattress dropped. It was as if I was lifted. As soon as I opened my eyes, it just dropped. It scared me so bad I slept in the living room the rest of the night. The next morning, I explained to my dad what had happened, and the reaction he gave me was something I didn't expect. He looked scared and speechless. To try and maybe make it a little less awkward, I told him maybe I was just too tired or had a falling dream, even though I knew I was not dreaming. His only reply to me was, pray. A few days passed, and I had not felt anything nor experienced anything. My mom had gone out of town with my youngest brother, and the second youngest went to spend his summer vacation with his godfather in San Diego. It was just me and my dad at home. One night, around 2:30 a.m., as I got up to use the restroom, I noticed my parents' bedroom light was still on. I thought to myself, maybe my dad left it on when he fell asleep. I opened the door and sat lying in bed with his back towards the door. I went around their bed to turn off the light when I heard my dad say, "Don't turn it off." As I turned to look at him over my left shoulder, my dad looked like he had just seen a ghost. His eyes were wide open and blood shot red, but they were staring at a corner and would not turn to look at me. I looked at him and replied, "Dad, you've worked at 5 a.m. You should be asleep." And all he could say was, "Don't turn it off." I left the light on as I walked out of his bedroom. I contemplated whether I should close his door or leave it open. All I could think about was the incident that happened to me. Could my house really be haunted? But how so after all these years and barely knew, and barely now? I could not sleep. After that, thoughts were flooding my mind and prayers were spilling out of me. I was hoping and praying that whatever was in my house could just go away. After that night, my dad wasn't the same. He was isolating himself, refusing to do anything, but just get up and go to work. He was just not fully there. And I knew something was wrong. That was not my dad. When my mom finally came home, it was a sense of relief. I didn't feel so helpless as I had felt, but the situation didn't seem to get any better. One afternoon, as my family gathered at my house having a barbecue, having a good time, a family friend was here from out of town. She also happened to be a medium. At the time, I had no clue she was a medium. In fact, no one did. As I was sitting, eating my food, she suddenly tapped on my shoulder and asked me if I could show her the restroom. I thought it was odd, being that she had been to my house before, but I agreed. As I showed her the restroom, she suddenly blurted out the question, "How long has this been going on?" I looked at her with a puzzled look, and I immediately knew what she was talking about. It was just me and her in the house. Everyone else was in the backyard. I told her I wasn't exactly sure, and told her about what I had experienced. She told me she felt an evil presence, and it wanted something. She turned around and headed towards my parents' bedroom. I was scared to follow, but I did anyway. She refused to step foot inside the room. She just stayed outside the bedroom door, staring in as if she was trying to figure something out. I was so scared. I left her there and went back outside. More than a half hour later, she asked us to leave the house and asked only my grandma, my mom, my dad, and my dad's brother to stay. She sent the rest of us off somewhere, nowhere near my house. I thought that was odd. When I guess it was safe to return, I walked in my house, and the air and the environment was different. You were able to breathe. You no longer felt the uneasy feeling. The house was peaceful, as was my dad. I knew they had done some kind of blessing or something, but I never asked what or how. I just left the situation alone, never brought it up, and never asked any questions. I was just overjoyed at the fact that everything was going to be okay. Months after, I overheard my grandma and my mom talking about what had happened. I learned that someone had practiced black magic on my dad and utilized an article of his clothing. I don't know much about it or how it was used and for exactly what, but it completely freaked me out. The only people that ever enter our house and roam it freely are family members. No strangers or anyone we know that would want to do any harm. They had placed two malignant spirits in our home to torment my dad physically and mentally. That would tell him to kill himself. They wanted my dad dead for what we will never know. I've never asked my dad about what happened. I feel it's a touchy subject with him, and it's something I want to put behind us. All I know is I have my daddy back, and we are more devoted to God now than ever before. We did eventually find out who was behind the black magic, but that's another story. I'll definitely submit soon. Thanks for letting me share my story. I love your show, and keep up the great work.
That's a really good story.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really glad that they were able to find out what was going on before it was too late, because it sounded like it was getting, you know, really bad, really fast.
That sort of stuff really creeps me out.
Yeah.
Where it's like, human beings with the intention to do something,
mm-hmm.
and somehow have the ability to do it.
Right.
Because it's like you can be a victim. Anyone can be a victim, you know?
Yeah.
Of that. And that's what really is just, it's creepy. And I've heard in different ways of people viewing this, and I don't know what's true, I don't know what's not true, because I don't really know a whole hell of a lot about the subject other than what stories we've gotten in on this, that the person who is essentially being victimized by whatever it is also has to believe in whatever is going on.
Okay.
Or believe in the entity, or believe that it's a possibility. If you don't believe in it, from what I understand, and this could be completely wrong, so someone feel free to fill us in on this on the message board or something. If the person doesn't believe in it, that it doesn't necessarily take effect. I could be wrong on that, but I have heard that as a way of viewing this.
Okay.
Topic. Now, I don't know if that's accurate. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if you can prove it one way or the other. But if someone would like to fill us in on that, up on the message board or the forum section, or a letter, whatever, that'd be fine.
Now, you're saying the person who, in this case, put the curse on has to believe wholeheartedly, or the person who is the victim of the curse?
Well, the person who's a victim of the curse, because the person who's putting the curse on very likely believes in it, in most cases, I guess, you know. But the victim also has to believe in that the power to do that exists.
Okay.
Essentially. They can't be like, yeah, that's, you know, hocus pocus, not true, can't happen. That's my understanding.
Okay.
Could be wrong, but that's, I know that that is a take on it with some people.
Okay.
And this is really, it's an opinion thing.
Sure.
But I don't believe there's any scientific studies about this. Is there?
About curses?
Yeah.
The only thing I can think of that comes to mind is people that take lava rocks from Hawaii. And I think it's one specific volcano. Mm-hmm. But they take it and they know full well the folklore and the curse behind it. Mm-hmm. That if you take it, you're supposed to be cursed and all these bad things will happen. So much so that people are like, I don't believe that. And they take these rocks that Hawaii apparently has set up a specific address for mailing these rocks back because so many of them come back.
Really?
Yeah, because they want to return them to the volcano because essentially they believe it belongs to, I believe it's a goddess, but I'm not sure. I probably have that all botched, but I know that there is a address that you send these lava rocks to send them back because people want to get rid of the curse.
Wow. So essentially, they take it home thinking, yeah, hocus pocus.
Yeah.
And then suddenly, stuff starts happening.
So they want to get rid
and
of that.
Like, okay, sending the rock back now.
Yeah.
What if it got lost in the mail on the way back? Would you?
That would be bad.
You're kind of stuck with the curse thing. Can you like send that like certified?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. I wonder where the lava rocks came from that my dad brought home when I was a kid.
I don't know.
He brought home some lava rocks. They were in my room for a long time. They're probably in one of the boxes
and
of stuff
see,
in the garage.
I think it has to be from a specific volcano.
Sure, sure. Interesting. I'm sure someone will fill us in on that one, too.
Yeah, that would be nice to know the whole story.
And what volcano to avoid.
Yeah.
Because it would be fun to take some souvenirs back. Just want the cursed ones. That's all. You know?
Right.
855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. Of course, you can also write in on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. If you listen to us on iTunes and you enjoy the show, take a couple seconds and give us some positive reviews there. Greatly appreciate that. That helps us grow in the rankings. So if you like it and it's worth it to you, 5 seconds of your time, give us a little something nice written there. A couple, maybe 5 stars or something. That would be greatly appreciated. Rosaria writes in, hi, thanks for letting me share. I had a boyfriend when I lived in Virginia. We'd often go visit his mother, Sarah, who lived in a house in Danville, Virginia. She had inherited the house from her father after his death. Sarah's father was a lonely old man that lived by himself in conditions of squalor until his death. He'd been very religious, and after his death of his last wife, he stayed single and lived alone in this house that he had made himself. He's very attached to the house and the things in them. In the time between his passing and his daughter's move into the house was uninhabited for some time. During this time, freaky local teenagers would sneak in and use the house to practice satanic rituals. They dirtied the already dirty house with feces and blood. Upon moving into the house, Sarah had to clean all that crap off the walls. She eventually repainted and remodeled the house, but when I went to visit the first couple of times, it still looked dismal. The old-time furniture was still in its place, and there were pictures and paintings of some dead relatives hung on the walls. I did not feel comfortable there. To make matters worse, Sarah had mentioned that although she was, for the most part, alone in the house, she did not feel alone because she could feel the presence of her daddy. She told me that she could see his ghost hovering over her in bed. To her, this was very comforting. To me, hearing this was entertaining, since I enjoy ghost stories, but I cannot say that I had ever seen a ghost, nor was I prepared to do that. When my boyfriend and I visited Sarah in Danville, we would usually stay for the weekend. I did not like spending time there because she was bipolar and always exhibited very weird behavior. Sometimes she was extremely manic, and sometimes she was so depressed she barely looked at us. Through the veil of her weird demeanor, I could always notice a hint of evil. She was not well in her head, but deep down she was just not a good person at all. For example, she knew me and her son lived together and shared a room. Still, she used her old-fashioned house owner authority to make us have to sleep in separate rooms in her house. This was utterly ridiculous, and she was not old-fashioned at all in other matters. It was almost like she was trying to hurt our relationship. This one weekend that we were visiting her, she was not feeling too festive and went to sleep early, leaving my boyfriend and me drinking some wine by ourselves in the kitchen. The kitchen overlooked her bedroom and a little room in between her room and the kitchen. My boyfriend and I were having laughs and talking about something when my gaze shifted into this little room. This was an unconscious act. It was like my attention was called at an unconscious level to that specific corner of the little room. For fractions of a second, I discerned a small blue light that seemed to be hovering in the air at head height. As soon as I had looked at it, it flew away from sight. My instinctual reaction to this was to think that it was a car light reflecting off a window or mirror. I looked around to see where the reflection might have come from. After a minute or so of inspecting, I realized we were on the side of the house that overlooked a grass field, that there could not be a car light reaching that little room crunched in between the kitchen and Sarah's bedroom. I looked at my boyfriend and asked if he saw that, and he said, "Yes, I saw it too. I just felt like looking that way too." Then he proceeded to tell me that I should not be afraid, and that the good laughs in the house may have spiked the curiosity of the spirits. I was too spooked by then, and it would have been up to me. I would have left the house in the middle of the night and gone home, but I could not do that. I told my boyfriend that he had to sleep in the same bed with me against his mom's rules. He understood my fear and slept with me. This got him in huge trouble with Sarah, even after explaining what happened. This worked to my advantage because now she was pissed, and the best thing for us to do was to get out of there, to my relief. I don't know what that was, but it sure spooked me. I had to go in that house again reluctantly after that, but then my boyfriend's relationship with Sarah got really bad, and soon we were not welcome there anymore. Sarah spends a lot of time in that house. She does not go out much and has a lot of difficulties communicating with people, so she drinks, cooks, and spends mostly all of her time behind those walls. I don't think she's crazy because of the ghosts. She was always crazy, but I think secluding herself in that house must not have been good for her mental state either. But these are just speculations, of course. Thanks for letting me tell my story. My question for you is, how common is it for spirits to manifest themselves as shiny, floating lights? Also, I'd like to see a ghost and be sure it was a ghost. I have been to ghost tours but seen nothing. Can you two recommend a place that, in your opinion, would be very likely to encounter a ghost? Thank you.
Okay, Tony, where do you go to see a ghost?
Where do you go to see a ghost? Well, the only place I've ever seen a ghost was in West Bend, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
In that tower. And according to those folks, they had quite an active ghost season last October with a lot of people seeing stuff in that building.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my only experience as far as actually seeing.
Yeah.
I've heard things, I've experienced things, but I've never seen anything until that time in that window. There's plenty of haunted cities to go check out and have your luck at. You know, we didn't see anything or hear anything or experience anything when we were in Savannah, but a lot of people do. I would say go to a city or an area that's likely very haunted. You?
I think it just goes back to some people can and some people can't.
Yeah.
And some ghosts want you to see them and some ghosts don't.
I think anyone is capable of seeing one,
mm-hmm.
if the ghost wants you to see them. I think some people are going to be more sensitive to them and pick them up even when the ghosts don't want them to see them.
And see, that's what I was going to say. It may not be a matter of the ghost being like, I don't want to show myself to you. It's maybe more of a, I didn't see your beacon, so I'm not going to show myself.
Yeah.
Some people have a brighter light than others, and I think that kind of ties back into some people can and some people can't.
It's kind of like, remember when you were a kid,
mm-hmm.
and there was like it was like activity books, and there'd be that red film that you'd put over some pages, and then suddenly you'd see things that otherwise you couldn't see. It's kind of like that. I think some people have a film, essentially, where they can see the things that other people can't. And that's just how it is. And I think it's a very natural, normal thing. It's just, I think the population that has it is smaller than the ones that don't.
Now, as far as her other question on the shiny, bright orbs, I think that just depends on the type of ghost it is.
Yeah, I've heard many stories of people actually seeing orbs outside of films and catching it on camera. It happens. Quite common, I think.
Yeah,
It's actually, I think, one of the more common things people to see as opposed to a full bodied apparition. Mm-hmm. It's like, what was that? On to the issues of, and this is not a question from them, but it sounds to me like this is a story of someone who does obviously suffer with some mental illnesses, who, you know, hopefully she has some sort of treatment or whatnot. It doesn't sound like she does. But obviously the isolation is hurting that, I think, would not be good for that type of a person.
Right.
But unfortunately, too, with that, time and time again, it seems to be a magnet for for activity.
Well, I find it interesting that Sarah inherited the house from her father, who showed this behavior to begin with, and then she started showing the behavior.
Yeah.
It makes you wonder if it isn't the atmosphere.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably a combination of the two. Mm-hmm. It's like a toxic mix.
I mean, maybe not saying that he had, you know, bipolar disorder, but, you know, possibly that after losing, it sounded like a couple of spouses, probably because of age and whatever happens, that, you know, he may not have been feeling the greatest anymore. So he kind of went off to be by himself. So there kind of is a depressive type element there as well.
And then if you're there in a place where these things happen to also reside, you can become the attraction for them.
Yeah.
If you will. So thank you for the letter. We really do appreciate that. One more letter today. Zach writes in, "Hi, guys. I'm new to the podcast and absolutely love it. I was also extremely excited to hear some Trailer Park Boy references as well. I've always been fascinated and equally terrified by paranormal activity, which I feel I've experienced a fair amount of time in my life. I'm from Saskatchewan, and we have a fairly well-known paranormal phenomenon, the St. Louis Ghost Train. The St. Louis is a small town and a short ways out of town. There used to be train tracks. Where the tracks used to be, there have been sightings of a bright train light coming towards you." Ooh, this sounds awesome. "People have also seen a smaller light below the brighter light. There's obviously no train, and they've studied the cause, and it has never been able to be explained. Anyways, it's a pretty popular party spot growing up for the most. I live a short ways away from St. Louis, so I have also been out there a number of times without ever seeing the light. Although one night on my birthday, a friend and I went out there and drank a couple beers. He parked his car on the tracks, quote-unquote, and we just sat there and listened to some music. Then suddenly, we could see a light coming around the bend of trees until it was a huge, bright ball of light. It faded out and would come back to full brightness, but never actually reaching us. It's pretty cool, and I was happy to have finally been able to see it for myself. It's since been blocked off, still accessible by foot if you know where you're going. I notice you guys like researching stuff, and there's some pretty good videos out there of it. Anyways, keep up the great work. Can't wait for more. Hoping you enjoyed my story, but I mean, worst case Ontario, you hated it." Huh?
Ricky says worst case Ontario.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a Rickyism.
I don't remember.
Step up your TPB.
I don't remember that one.
Yeah.
Worst case Ontario?
Worst case Ontario. That's what he says.
Oh, that's one I never caught.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned a new one.
Totoso.
There's a new season of it coming out later this month. I'm very excited. I had to throw in a Rickyism, he says, smiley face. Okay, thank you so much for that. Really do appreciate that. Good story.
Yeah.
I'm going to YouTube that tomorrow if I'm bored at any point in the day, which I probably won't be, but I'll make some time.
Yeah, I want to see that, because what strikes me is the fact that the light comes around the bend and follows the tracks. It's not just like a straight shot.
I think that's like a residual type thing.
Probably.
When you have that, just that, I mean, it's a lot of energy being expelled, not from a human, but from an energy in general. Energy is energy. And there's a lot of it that would have been on those tracks. I love walking down abandoned train tracks.
Yeah.
I have always loved that since I was a little kid. There was like a couple in my old neighborhood that we could kind of find, and I'd always beg my aunt to take me back there to walk around and check it out. And I know there's a highway built on it, but I loved it. It's just, I don't know why. I always loved trains and the abandoned train tracks. Fun stuff.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that. Our phone number is 855-853-4802 to call in and share your real ghost story with us. Of course, you write it on the website as well, realghoststoriesonline.com. If you like the show, please help us keep it on the air and support it. Become an EPP, that's an extra podcast person. When you sign up on the website, it's only $5 a month. You get access to our back archive of EPP episodes, exclusive shows only that go to the EPPs, full hour-long episodes, 27 of them all in total right now. You get all of those, and then, of course, access to the brand new ones that come out every single week. We email those to you. So please support the show. Help keep us on the air. Like I said, only $5 a month, and we do greatly appreciate that. Check it out, realghoststoriesonline.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.